two. One more time. Welcome to Hungry Magazine Culinary Podcasting. All of our podcasts can be found at www.hungrymag.com. My name is Mike Nagrant, and this week I wanted to let you know about a little project Hungry Magazine is involved with. We just joined culinarypodcastnetwork.com. It's a group of like-minded culinary podcasting folks who are really excited about food and all things gastronomic. If you're looking for good podcasts on the internet about food, you should check it out. This week we sat down with Brad Rubin, the owner and the guy with the idea behind Chicago's 11 City Diner. 11 City Diner is a deli concept opening up in Chicago's South Loop neighborhood on March 30th.
Who did the design work or the aesthetic in general?
Me.
Yeah?
Yeah, me. And then I had some assistance in the beginning from a guy named Art Miner. Art was Art's 74 this year. He is now the chief architect of the Nine Group. Nine, Ghost Bar, mm-hmm. Dallas, and Vegas. But he was the original designer with Arnie Morton and Hugh Hefner in the all the Playroy resorts and casinos. And he was also the chief architect for the Hyatt through the 70s, designed the first 11 Morton Steakhouse. So he's like an old school guy. He gets it. He knows what we're trying to do. And he kind of helped me lay out the equipment and the different areas. And
where do these seats come from?
You can tell
they're kind of vintage. They're cool.
These things came from an old diner in Chicago.
Yeah?
I picked these up when the diner closed. It was cold. I picked these probably maybe, let's say, 10 months ago.
How about those benches? Same thing?
The benches, I picked the benches. These were old Fog City Diner benches.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, so, I mean, Fog City closed
so like San Francisco,
a long time
or?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, so we stripped them, and we bleached them, and we restained them, and the one upstairs here is now
yeah,
redone.
I saw the ones down
the
there.
The one down, yeah.
They have a nice Art Deco yeah. in there. Yeah, no, it's a great space. I like
it. It's kind of a mix of like a 1930s, 1940s, old school Jewish delicatessen diner. It's kind of a cross between everything.
So how long has this idea been in the works for you?
If I said forever, it would sound really, really weird. I love diners.
Yeah.
I've been in the business 19 years. This is my 19th year now. Like, I'm in it. This upcoming fall will be 20.
Yeah.
I did fine dining for a long time. I was with the Nine Group. I was with Michael Cornick, Bin 36, Starwood Properties, the W Hotel. This is what I know. I grew up on this stuff. So for me, it's like, you know, growing up, going to the Howard Johnson's for a ham steak and a pineapple ring or a corned beef with my folks or matzo ball soup. After all the fancy fine dining that I did, this is what speaks to me. And then I started working for a Greek family who does diners here in the city. And I realized this is what I want to do. So I started with this concept about 3 years ago. And a very good friend of mine, Michael Cornick, we started bouncing some ideas around, and we started going, yeah, 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 and it just kind of went like that, and I did a lot of traveling with Michael, a lot of traveling on my own. Obviously, both coasts from L.A. to New York were a lot, not all,
yeah,
a lot of the delicatessens that are still around are still around, and it rolled in from there.
What are some of the legendary delis that you look up to? And
no, that's a good question.
You know,
Langer's in L.A.
Yeah,
off of 8th. Unbelievable meats.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, the father and son are still running it. It's amazing. It inspired me in a lot of ways to say, wow, guys still do this. Like, it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
It can really still be done. Katz is in New York.
Of course.
You have to throw that down. Second Avenue Deli. Second mm-hmm. Avenue in New York. Unbelievable. They do some really good things. And even though it's a big place, and it still has that warm feel. The Full Moon Diner up in Waukegan. I kind of grew up going there off of Highway 41. In New York, a little bagel shop called Essa Bagel mm-hmm. puts out an amazing bagel. The old Rascal House. Now it's Jerry's Deli, but when the Rascal House was the Rascal House in Boca Raton down in Florida, Miami Beach, just the people who worked there, it just blew me away.
Yeah,
the red vinyl, you know, pleather booths, the size of the matzo ball soup. You know, things aren't what they are. They're bought by Jerry's now. It's all, you know, the old Wolfies. It's all one company. I think they may have changed some things that they do, but the decor, the environment, the attitude, the energy, I mean, that's you're home when you walk in there.
Yeah. Do you remember your first deli experience? Do you remember, or maybe not your first, but when it was first to you?
Yeah, when it first made sense to me. And that's some of the stuff that we want to bring back, like the old toy chest. When you walk in, you had the toy chest there, and you get a toy when you walk up. It was called Goodman's. It was in Highland Park.
Okay.
I used to go there with my next-door neighbor, Maury Rubin. He was like a father to me, a grandfather to me. That was a big, the gold coin, which was a diner, which was, the gold coin or the three gold coins. It was off of Devon, which is now an Indian restaurant on the corner. Going there with my folks, which is in West Rogers Park in the old neighborhood. You know, going to diners like that. The Howard Johnsons, growing up with my parents, we traveled all around by car at least twice a year. We'd jump in the car for a week or two and going to every diner. Definitely every Howard Johnson's. For me, you walk into Howard Johnson's. You know, you knew what you were getting, you know, milkshake with a tin, you know, things like that, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great idea for the city. I mean, I think, you know, I'll give the folks who are here their due, like Ashkenaz and you know, some of the folks, you know, I know Max and Benny's has just moved in, but generally speaking, Chicago City proper has kind of had a dearth of good deli.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from the Pickle Barrel, the original Pickle Barrel, which I'm still old enough to remember, the original bagel, the original Ashkenaz. Yeah, we had tons of them.
But
I think there's good reason that they've gone out.
Yeah. You think it's a commercialization and going away from those principles that you are going
to... No. If I thought that people were going off the principles, I wouldn't have rolled the dice with this concept.
Yeah.
It just ends up being what I love.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm lucky that everyone digs it. Yeah. I mean, everyone loves deli. Who doesn't love deli?
Yeah.
And Jewish deli is even a twist on that. I think that the reason here, not only here, but even in New York, I think that the original generation that came over, they struggled hard. That generation, the generation after that, they worked in the restaurants and they did very well for themselves. I think it afforded a generation before me and my generation, it afforded us the ability to have certain material or certain tastes, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a lot of people, they didn't want to work 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to work 18 hours a day, 15 hours a day, every day, because you have to be. So I think for a lot of people, it was a lot of work. And I think even for the parents, they wanted something better for their kids. You don't need to go in the business. You don't have a better life. Mm-hmm. Do something with your life. Be a doctor. Be a lawyer. I think there was a lot of pressure from the families, the Jewish families. I think other guys, they wanted to do something more glamorous, a trader, a lawyer, a world traveler. I think a lot of the heart and the passion, the other generations kind of fell through. And then also a lot of the guys who started out were very savvy. They bought their real estate in the end. And it was very lucrative for them to sell to they used to be in all the different corners, all over the place. They'd sell to the banks, to the Starbucks, to the Subways. All these great corner stores have been bought or leased or given up, which are much more profitable, or I shouldn't say more profitable. Profitable, yes, not as much, nowhere as much work as it is running a place like this.
Sure.
It's a crazy business, and I think that a lot of people just kind of made different choices for themselves, and they kind of slowly, steadily disappeared from the city's landscape.
Okay. Yeah. That makes absolute sense. I interviewed Chef Noah Bukowski at Aria the other day, and one of the things we were talking about is, you know, what if his kids wanted to grow up to be chefs?
What'd he say?
He's like, I thought it was a great answer. You know, it was the idea that, you know what, you want to show the world to your kids, show them all the opportunities available, and support them in whatever they choose, you know, and so it doesn't matter. If they really want to be a chef, that's fine. You know, it is hard work, but at the same time, it's a good living, and it's been a good life for him. So,
oh, I completely agree.
You know, and it's just, you know, I grew up in a blue-collar family, and so I had some of that same emphasis, you know, you should be a doctor or a lawyer, you know. It's like, writer, what's that, you know? So, yeah, I think that's a great
point. And I think a lot of parents feel that way, but in the end, all it's done, it's given us a lot of doctors, a lot of lawyers, and it's, I think, been partly responsible for some of our culture, my culture, but everybody's culture. Everybody knows a Jewish deli, or everybody knows that corner diner, that corner coffee shop, which now is, the whole coffee shop culture has even changed a little bit because we don't have that long counter with the seated, you know, cantilevered stools with chair backs with a percolator across from us. And you know, I'm not looking to reinvent anything. I just want to
bring it back or
bring it. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's bring it back or keep it alive or I don't know what it is. But I just, I want to. There's no reason we can't do it and do it profitably and do it where we take care of the people and exceed the those expectations of what you get when you walk into a typical all-night diner.
Right.
You know, we're going to have a nice piece of fish. Michael Koenig's, you know, Atlantic salmon, you know, balsamic glazed, honey glazed. We're going to have a nice piece of fish. If we're doing a steak, a Tom Waits 1987 2 a.m. special steak and eggs, I'm going to give you a nice steak and a you know, good three great eggs.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I saw that on the menu. Are you a big Tom Waits fan? Is it just the idea of what Tom Waits embodies?
Well, there's an old story that I used to hang out at the Full Moon. I think I mentioned that before. And, you know, we could have sworn that one night that we all swear it was true. And this is back in high school as we were graduating, we were seniors. It probably was like, it wasn't two, it was past two, but it wasn't three, but we knew it was two something. And we could swear that Tom Waits was there eating with us. And for as long as I remember, when we think the Full Moon or we think Tom Waits, we think the Full Moon chocolate shake. We were eating chocolate shakes and fries. Chocolate shake fries and Tom Waits, who we swear was there.
Yeah.
And the waitress didn't know who Tom Waits was, and we kept telling him, that was Tom Waits. Yeah. And all she kept looking at us going, Tom who? and we were so frustrated because we wanted someone to acknowledge that Tom Waits was at the Full Moon Diner. And so it's kind of like a snuffleupagus in many ways.
Well, you know, the truth is what you believe, so.
I'd like to believe it was Tom Waits. It makes me feel good. My brush with fame.
Let's talk about the menu a little bit. You know, I think the deli comes from the word delicacies, and so, you know, I was looking at the menu. I think one of the things, you know, maybe not typical, or it's maybe it is, but interesting to me is that you're offering a mother special.
Absolutely.
You know, and I'm a big fan of New Orleans. I was there last year for Jazz Fest, and you know, I think that's great. Let's talk about the staples. You know, bagels. I mean, that's a big thing. You know, the boiling and the baking, and you know, everybody's like Brooklyn water. But you know, is that really true?
There's nothing like a New York bagel. I am going to be the first person to tell you there's nothing like a New York bagel. However, it was a difficult but yet easy decision for me to make when I made the decision not to make my own bagels.
Mm-hmm.
A bakery is a different animal. If you're a bakery, you're a bakery, and if you're not, then you're not. But it's a complete different animal. It's a complete different staff. The dedication to making it every single day, waking up, the crew coming in at 4, 4:30 in the morning. I had worked at a bakery before, and I want to concentrate on what we do best, which is the delicatessen, the foods. We're going to be preparing our own meats, cooking our own meats, roasting some meats, making our own soups. I want to concentrate on that. Bakery is an area that one day, if I'm lucky enough and we have the money and the energy and the staff and the right people to execute it, I'd love to make my own challah. I'd love to make my own bagels, my own rye, all that stuff. I'm going to leave that to the professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're talking to different people, everyone from Chaim over on Tui at New York Bagel, New York Bialy, which I think makes unbelievable stuff, to a couple other guys here in the city. And still looking for the right bagel.
Yeah.
But we'll find it.
How many have you tasted so far?
I can't count.
Yeah.
A lot of bagels. So bagels are important. But in terms of the standards on the menu, our meats are, we're not smoking our own pastrami.
Mm-hmm.
Pastrami we procure, but our own corned beef, our own brisket, of course, our own roast beef, our own real turkey. There's no reason we can't roast our own meats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more labor intensive. I think it definitely drives up our cost of doing business considerably. But if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right, I guess. Mm-hmm. Right the way we do it. It's not to say that anyone else who buys their meats, which are wonderful meats from other places, and they buy them from other processors and manufacturers, doesn't mean that they're not fine meats. For us, our concept, our brand, what we want to put out to people, again, is doing it in-house.
Are there any special equipment or things that you bought from other places or that were...
A custom steamer made.
Yeah?
I have a custom steamer. I learned about the steamer and the right temperature to hold the meats all from the Langer boys, the father and son out in California. Spent a lot of hours clocked in at their counter. And I had a local guy here who had designed a similar steamer to the specifications that they use out there. And I think it's not just who we buy our raw meat from, our corned beef and our pastrami. It's how we cook it, and not just how we cook it, It's how we hold the meat all day, and then how we plate it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all those things coming together. I mean, we got guys who've worked at the old Belden Deli.
Yeah.
We got guys from Stouffer's. We have guys from the original Pickle Barrel, the original Barn and Bagel, the original Ashkenaz. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got lineage here, you know, guys in their 40s, 50s, and even late 60s that have been doing this before I was born at 36 years old, who... it's what they know. They're professionals.
So, you know, that being said, I mean, I think a counterperson or a counterman is
at,
you know, what makes a good counterman for you? And, you know, are you going to emphasize those kind of things? Are you going to let those guys take what they already know and just do it?
Well, I'm not looking to reinvent the wheel or fix anything that isn't broken. I mean, all these cliches, and I hate cliches, but they're cliches because they're true.
Sure.
I'm not looking to change anything. The guys that we found that believe in what we're doing and this is what they do and they know, I want them to be themselves. They're invited here to work with us, and they were gracious enough to say, yeah, we believe in what you're doing, and they can do what they want. And I mean, I want to encourage them to be who they are. There's no guidelines. I think the only guidelines we have here for countermen is sanitation and cleanliness. I think some of the old habits of you know, guys who've been doing this a long time, I think the emphasis on sanitation and cleanliness and execution of certain things and portion control and procedure and inventory control, I think those are things that might be newer, if anything is new to the guys who've been working so long in the business. You know, these guys are teaching this to us. I'm learning all this from them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've worked in these places with them, and I watch them do their magic and charm the customers from across the counter.
Yeah.
It comes natural to these guys. I mean, they know how to debone a side of lox. They know how to, you know, take a side of beef, and they know how to carve it. I couldn't imagine ever knowing what these guys know. So, yeah, they're gonna do their thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, we definitely have guys with character.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's good, because that's important. So.
I think it is.
So you spent a lot of time with the Cornet Group, and I know you were Ben 36, and you did a lot of that. What do you take out of the non-deli world that you're bringing in here?
Well, you mentioned Michael. Michael has been an incredible mentor to me. I first met Michael back in 1988 when. He was assisting Amy Morton. It was 89 I met Michael through the Morton family that I started working with in 88 at Arnie's. And Michael was helping Amy Morton to open up the Blue Room Meridor, where Kamahachi is now. And that's the first time I met Michael in a kitchen. And since then, I've worked with him in numerous places and obviously lots of years. And he became a very good friend and an incredible mentor. Part of what I... has molded me, and I share that, and my managers share the same philosophy. It's our vision is the way we take care of people, exceeding the expectations, the attention to detail. I mean, these are all basic, you know, they sound like buzzwords that everybody throws out, but it really means a lot more. It's not like a line item in a handbook, in a manual of how we take care of people. It crosses everything. It crosses the kind of glass. We have glasses for little kids. I mean, we've mm-hmm. thought of not everything, but we really thought of things that make it easier for mothers to dine here,
mm-hmm.
that make it easier for people to order out with our curbside pickup. Our to-go containers are designed not just to be eco-friendly, which we believe they are, no styrofoam, but they're designed for people to be able to... I use the right weight fork. I mean, I think we really thought of so many things and really thinking about people as diners.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael and I eat out... not every day, but as a single guy right now, I eat out every day.
Yeah.
Michael used to eat out every day, and he still continues to dine several times a week, a number of times a day.
Right.
I think as being a diner, Michael and I both feel very similar, that there are certain things that need to be taken in consideration and emphasized and executed time after time, and missing it once is really no excuse. Consistency is a big key for us, and Michael as a mentor has drilled that in my head, and you know, I'm completely with the gospel, as we say, and our philosophy I've learned everywhere from Four Seasons that I spent a very short period of time at in Vegas, to all the other mentors I've had who've come out of the Lettuce Group, the Levy Group. You know, there's a reason why those groups are successful.
Sure.
And what Michael has taught me, and what other guys like Joe King, is another guy I work for Joe over at Le Passage.
Mm-hmm.
He's Japanese, Le Passage, Le Colonial. He's been connected with a lot of different restaurants. Joe King has been a great mentor and friend also, and really helped guide me to what's important and focusing. And look, you know, at 36, I'm still learning all this, and I've had the chance to work for a lot of great guys like that. And I'm lucky that they were all the same kind of guys. They were businessmen. They were operators and businessmen, not fancy guys. They wanted to have a fancy place and to invite all their friends and buy drinks for the house. They're passionate, and they're number crunchers, and they're serious professionals, and I was able to learn from these guys.
Sure. So you have a ton of experience in the industry, and you know, you said you're still learning. Was there something unexpected in building this thing from the ground up that, you know, rocked you a little bit, or that
everything?
Just, yeah.
I first of all, I mean, this is my fifth opening. Yeah. I've opened up other restaurants, especially in the past 4 or 5 years that I've been a consultant of sorts and doing this for other people and learning, preparing myself for my own venture. Nothing could have prepared me to deal with what I dealt with. Mm-hmm. I think I did a lot of growing through this. There were great people by me, like Michael Cornick, like Joe King, who've really helped me kind of get with the program, be a little bit more flexible, remind me to be flexible. This is a crazy business. Mm-hmm. And the things that I thought I had down, I didn't. The things that I thought were going to be easy weren't. The things that I thought were going to be hard were easy. Uh-huh. So it I don't know if it's Murphy's Law. Yeah. I don't know if it's just the way it is. But, you know, building a restaurant, rehabbing a space, building a mezzanine from scratch. There are so many variables in a restaurant.
Sure.
That can go wrong. If it went wrong, if it could go wrong, it did. But we survived, and I think the place is gorgeous. And
yeah, it is. It's beautiful.
I can't wait to do another one, but yeah. I want to concentrate on making this one successful.
I read that you took a sidetrack in corporate America for a few years. What did
I
you
did,
do?
I did. You read that, huh?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
it's true. I kind of like what we said before with you know, your folks had encouraged you to do this and do that. My family has a business. My father is an engineer and a representative for semiconductors.
Okay.
For internationally, for mostly Japanese and Chinese manufacturers of components. And, yeah, so I tried it for a while.
Yeah.
And it was fancy. You know, I did a lot of travel, a lot of international travel and U.S. travel. I was going to be 2 months, 2 weeks out of the month, every month. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And at night, I would work for Michael Cornick.
Yeah.
Or I would work for Joe King.
Yeah.
At different venues. So I've always stayed in the business. And both Joe and Michael were very flexible with my schedule, with my travel schedule, with my at the time, my mainstay. I love this business, man.
Yeah.
And I did it. It wasn't me. I think I was good at what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it a lot. And I think about it from time to time, but I wouldn't trade it. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, you gotta follow your heart.
I mean, you're.
Let's say you know you're having a dinner party. You can invite anybody. It doesn't have to be food people. It might be food people. Who do you want there? You know, and why?
Alive or dead?
Can be dead. Absolutely.
Now I'm having a dinner party, and I'm having it here in this restaurant.
Yeah.
I'd want my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
I would want my next door neighbor, Maury Rubin. I would want my parents. I would want Michael Cornick. I'd want Joe King. I would want the poet Rumi.
The poet?
Rumi.
Ah, yeah. Not
Jalal al-Din Rumi.
Okay.
Yeah. I would want, who would I want? I would want the love of my life.
Yeah.
I haven't found her yet.
Yeah.
When I find her, I want her there.
The idea.
I would want people who inspire me.
Yeah.
People who have mentored me. People that I want to say thank you to.
Yeah.
Because this restaurant is a way that I give back, man. And
yeah.
When you're in the restaurant, I can do for you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, when you're in this space, whatever I got in the cupboard, whatever I got here, I can say thank you. A lot of people are paying for it. Those people aren't
sure.
at that dinner party, but it just there's a few ways you can say thank you. And I'm not a musician. I can't, you know. But this is my art. And if I invite you over for dinner, I can.
Yeah, you take care of. How tough was it to raise the money for this venture?
There wasn't anything that I've done for this restaurant that wasn't tough.
Yeah. It's a fair enough answer.
There was nothing, okay?
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't, I take that back. What wasn't tough was coming up or realizing it's what I wanted to.
Yeah.
That was the easiest thing. So I think then that would make that statement a fair statement.
Sure.
Aside from knowing what I want to do with my life and knowing what I want to do with the concept, everything else has been a challenge.
Yeah. How many hours are you putting in right now with the whole, like, 24 a day?
On the way out, when you see the blankets and the booth, I slept there last night.
Oh, wow.
So,
it's getting
close. Let's just say I don't work any less or any more than anybody else who's done this or is doing it right now.
Yeah.
I think everybody in the business, it comes to the territory.
Yeah. Who's this poet? I'm not familiar with
what. Jalaluddin Rumi?
I don't.
Rumi is a Sufi. It's Sufism. It's a Sufi poet. It's unbelievable poetry of love and dedication and searching and longing and yearning, and it's just romantic poetry. There's a lot of religious text in it, but it really, I think, it transcends that. I think it's universal truths of being human.
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks to me.
I'll have to check that out.
And it's inspired me a lot, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, another reason to have the guy at the dinner party to say thank you.
Absolutely.
I'll have someone for him to eat.
Yeah.
I know what he eats.
Yeah.
I know what my other friends eat.
Yeah. Where are you eating? You know, you said you still like to dine out. You know, are there any places?
The last sandwich I had was a Manny's corned beef sandwich.
Okay.
Michael Cornick came here to check in to make sure I was still alive.
Yeah.
And he brought me a corned beef sandwich on Saturday afternoon. Yeah.
Did Michael tell him you were going to take away some of the business?
No. You know what? A lot of people have asked me that question. What Manny's? First of all, I love Manny's. I've been quoted saying I love Manny's. What Manny's does unbelievably well.
Yeah.
All right, Manny's is incredible. I mean, Manny's, of course, inspired me here in the city. What they do, they're great at what they do. They're the best in the city at what they do, undoubtedly. I think what we do is something different. I think the people who are curious, who are Manny's diehard customers, they might check us out, see what it's about. They'll go back to Manny's.
Sure.
You can't beat Manny's. Manny's is incredible.
Yeah.
But I think for the people who are looking for what we can offer, which is a little different menu, full table service, a different atmosphere, I think those will be the customers that we will have. And will I put a dent in Manny's business, which everyone asks me? No way. Manny's has been around for decades, and they'll continue to do so. And I will continue being a big fan and a customer of Manny's. I mean, it's Manny's. It's incredible stuff.
Definitely. So Norman Robinson, the consulting chef, how'd you hook up with him? What did he bring to the table?
Norman, another mentor. Norman brought his energy, his vibe, his recipes, his dogma of deli first, delicatessen first. Norman brought inspiration. Norman brought a lot of music, because we're only playing blues and jazz here. He's an old jazz musician. Norman brought me friendship. He brought me encouragement. He brought me staff. He brought me, the list goes on. He's a great guy. I work with him at a delicatessen up north, and he taught me a lot. Matter of fact, the story goes that one of the reasons I won't do a bakery, there were holes in the bottom of the Kaiser rolls, and like a little whippersnapper I am and was, I said to Norman, there's holes in the bottom of the Kaiser rolls. You can't serve this. And I remember storming off like I was, was a real big smartass. And I went and I called the owner. We can't serve these. You can't cut these in half, because if you do, the bottom half has a hole in it. And I was playing out of my league.
Yeah.
The owner called Norman, and Norman pulls me aside. I know he was pissed at me. He says to me, let me tell you something. I've seen at least nine or 11 guys like you come and go in the past 9 years here, and I'm not impressed with any of you. Let me tell you something. I got holes in my bread, and he was nice, but he was stern. I want to invite you to come cook in the bakery, and you tell me what you think. And I'm like, okay, Norman, that's great, because I was ready to learn, I was there to learn, and I knew I wanted to open a place one day, and I showed up at 4 o'clock the next day. Was the next day or the day after? It was the morning after my cousin's wedding. And I left the wedding. I was only at the wedding an hour so I could wake up and be at work at 4.
Mm-hmm.
I worked my ass off for 2 days in that kitchen, because I worked two shifts from 4 until about 9 at night. I have never and will never ever question Norman again when it comes to stuff like that. You can't get the perfect piece of bread when you're doing it by hand. And that really started my relationship with Norman.
Mm-hmm.
It was at that point that I realized that I have a lot to learn.
Mm-hmm.
and he has a lot to teach me, and he won me over because he really, I got respect for someone that I can learn from someone that knows how to teach, from someone that has not paid their dues, but someone who's a teacher, who's
mm-hmm.
a mentor, and that really strikes a chord with me, and I have the highest, utmost respect for Norman, and Norman's role here in the restaurant is not only as a guru, a spiritual advisor, a music, what do they call them?
Conductor?
No.
Guru?
A music guru, we'll call him music guru. I cannot. Audiophile. Norman adds a lot to this place, and he's really introduced us to a lot of guys who have learned from him over the years. I'm indebted to Norman, and I hope, although he doesn't want to work and doesn't need to work anymore, the man's retired, the man has a stool and a chair here, and I hope that he continues to walk the kitchen and taste the soup and make sure we're pinching the crepe blocks in the right way and, you know, adding the right amount of spice and herb to the matzo balls, and, you know, his energy is here.
This ends this culinary podcast for Hungry Magazine. Check out www.hungrymag.com for more. Four, three, two.